That's it.
Thank you.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So. No, I'm kidding. And we come to consider this evening Parshas Emor. The Parsha of the Kohanim, of course, within the Sefer of the Kohanim, Sefer Vayikra. And it immediately opens with the well-known injunction. Indeed, throughout history, there are many people who are only aware that they are Kohanim because of this. They remember their father never went to a Beis HaKvaros, their grandfather. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Pirek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph, Emor al Kohanim bnei Aaron, Va'amarta alehem lenefesh lo yitama ba'ama. It's also for them to come in contact, to contract tumah from a mace, from a deceased. And of course, there's many halachas that relate to this. But let us begin by just taking a look at the pasuk and raising a simple question. It's actually a question that Rashi has discussed in the name of Chazal. And that is, there is something of a redundancy in this opening pasuk. Vayomer Shema Moshe, Emor el HaKohanim. And how would we translate Emor el HaKohanim? Say to the Kohanim. What should you say? Lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav. However, the pasuk doesn't say that. The pasuk adds in an extra phrase. Emor el HaKohanim bnei Aaron, ve'omarta alehem. Say to them. Say to the Kohanim and say to them. So the second ve'omarta, of course, seems to be redundant. This is a departure from what we perhaps are used to, the formula of daber el bnei Yisrael, or daber el whoever, ve'omar ta'alehem, because dibor and amira have separate connotations. But amira and amira is one and the same thing. Rashi talks about it. Emor ve'omar ta, says Rashi, lazhir gedolim ala kitanim, that the adults are enjoined to see to it that even their children, who are not yet chayiv in mitzvahs per se, under bar mitzvah, also keep away the children of the Kohanim. That's Rashi's comment, and there's many halachos that relate to that as well. But a most fascinating response to this very basic question, the redundancy of emor, the omarta, is to be found in the Perush Ponim Yofos. The Ponim Yofos was written by Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, the Hafla. He was one of the Rebbes of the Chasam Sofer, himself a Talmud of the Mesuch Magid, the Rav in Frankfurt. And in the Ponim Yofos, he has the most fascinating insight into this pasuk. We know that one of the accompanying halachas with regards to a person who converts to Torah, converts to Judaism, one who becomes a ger, is that they are considered to be newborn from that day. In the words of the Gemara, ger shenis gayer kekotan sheno ladomi. Once a person becomes a Jewish, it's like they were born on that day. One of the implications of that halacha is that they no longer have family ties to people that they previously did, even as far as the Torah is concerned. They enter life anew, which is very interesting. Of course, practically speaking, again, there's a lot to talk about, but in principle, that means that even if a family would convert, they are no longer considered to be related one to the other. Now, what does this have to do with us? Who converted, actually? As far as the Gemara is concerned, at a certain point, the entire Jewish people converted. For it's a very interesting question. What we call the Jewish people, when did we become Jewish? When did the Jewish people begin? That's a very involved discussion. Who was the first Jew? Is Avram the first Jew? He's certainly the father of the Jewish people. Was he himself Jewish? With all of the halachas that apply to a Jew, it's an interesting shaila. And the Mefarshim...
We say that each one is an individual when it becomes Jewish. Does that mean brothers and sisters are not brothers and sisters anymore?
That's right.
They could marry each other.
In principle.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
In principle, with a very small p. Practically speaking, of course, do not be surprised to hear that midrabbanan, brothers and sisters, do not marry each other, even if they came. In fact, many halachas of Geirus are learnt from Matan Torah. Ad kadekach, the Talmud in Maseches Yevamos, Daf Memvav, for when the Jewish people accepted the Torah, that's when they became Jewish. And if that's true, so in the wake of this development comes an interesting question. Are the Jewish people related to each other post-Matan Torah? Or do they all now continue life as newborns? Do we say the principle of Ger Shenis Gair Kekotan Shenolad with regards to the Jewish people post their Geirus in Matan Torah? According to some, by the way, this is the reason why we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos. Megillas Rus is the story of a Geirus. Shavuos, the day of Matan Torah, is a day of Geirus for the entire Jewish people. Now, one of the corollaries of this would be with regards to Kohanim, who on the one hand we say they're not allowed to come to contact with a mace, with a number of exceptions. Those exceptions are close family members, as the pasuk goes on to say, Kiim Lishero, Hakarovilov, Leimo, Ula Ave, Vilivno, Ulavito. And the question therefore crystallizes as follows. Shall we say that the Kohanim, who originally received Parshas Emor, were not able to partake of the exceptional cases in Parshas Emor? For they had no close family members. Even brothers one to the other, if they're not considered related, then there would be no heter to be tamei lemeis, even one to the other. It happens to be that according to many, as much as the Jewish people in every respect underwent a Geirus at the time of Har Sinai, but the concept that they are now considered to be newborn does not apply to the Jewish people. Even post-Matan Torah, the Jews are not considered to be Kekoton Shenola Domi. Says the Ponim Yophos, that is what is being emphasized by the two expressions in the beginning of Parshas Emor. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Emor el Kohanim bnei Aaron. Say this to the Kohanim. Who's the Kohanim? All the Kohanim, all descendants of Aaron. But there are two Kohanim specifically who may have felt themselves to be beyond this halacha. And they are, of course, Aaron's sons themselves, Elazar and Itamar. Perhaps they're not related to each other. And if that's the case, then they could not be. They would not have these six exceptions. To that end, says the Ponim Yophos, the Pasuk continues, V'omarto alehem. As if to say, this halacha, not only the general prohibition, but also the six exceptions, are true not only for Kohanim in general, but also for Aaron's sons specifically. They also have this dispensation, because as much as they, with the Jewish people, have become Jewish, have become Geirim, nonetheless, they are considered related one to the other. What's most interesting is the notion that they may not be considered related to each other, with the implications for becoming Tomei one for the other, is not just a theory per se, but could be perhaps grounded in precedent. For the truth of the matter is, Elazar and Itamar, the two sons of Aaron, have actually already undergone bereavement. Because two of the other sons of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, what happened in Parsha Shmini, and they died. Now it happens to be that when it's mutter, permissible for a Kohen to become Tomei for a relative, it's a mitzvah. It's family. It's a mitzvah. That said, let us see what happened when Nadav and Avihu died. Who was charged to take care of them? As we know, the two people that were told to do so were their cousins, Mishael and Eltzafan, Bnei Uziel, their cousins. It's very interesting. The rule generally is, Krovim should take care of each other, even Kohanim. Yet somehow, on this occasion, those who should have been first in line, Elazar and Itamar, were overlooked. What are we to make of this? Now, there must be an explanation, and there are a number of explanations. I heard once from my father, Zatzal, that there are those who say that in, at least in certain respects, a Kohen, on the first day that he becomes a Kohen, has the status of a Kohen Gadol. For his opening day, he has the highest status in terms of how he goes about the Avodah. That is why, for example, the Kohen Gadol brings a mincha every day, brings a meal offering every day. A normal Kohen doesn't, except for his first day. That's the Minchas Chinuch. And in a sense, he has a certain point of analogy with the Kohen Gadol. And some say that is the reason why Elazar and Itamar, on the first day of their kahuna, were like a Kohen Gadol, unable to be metame even the Krovim. There are no lack of explanations, but one possible explanation in the mind of Elazar and Itamar may be, we were not told to become tame for them because we're not related to them, because we're all kekoton shenolad. So this is the an actual case precedent which is responsible for what we would call the Havamina, what they would have thought, that they have no relatives. To that end, the Torah says, V'omarta aleihem, not only to the Kohanim generally, but Aaron's son specifically are also considered related to each other. Everything that's said in this parsha is said to them as well. What's most interesting is, as we continue, just reading the words, just looking at the how the Torah expresses this, Aymar lakohanim, b'nei Aaron v'amartar aleihem, l'nefesh lo yitama da'amav, which we translated before. But we should note something very interesting. The Torah began, Emor el hakohanim, v'amartar aleihem, say to them, in the plural, and went on to say, and what shall you say, l'nefesh lo yitama da'amav? There's been a shift from the plural to the singular. It should have been va'amarta alehem lenefesh lo yitamu be'amam. That's va'amarta alehem. So, what are we to make of the shift from loshen rabim to loshen yachid? And this is a question which is raised by Rabbi Chaim ben Attar, the Orachaim HaKadosh. And he answers by actually raising a very basic question, one we may perhaps not have thought to ask. And that is, the Torah says, it is also for a Kohen to come into contact with a mace. Okay. Why? Now, immediately to qualify the question, what we mean to ask is, why does the, with regards to what does the Torah not want the Kohen to come into contact with a mace? Now, we would think the answer is obvious, because he's holy, and therefore he has to keep away from any form of tumah. That happens to be the answer. But there may have been another answer. One may perhaps have understood that when the Torah says a Kohen cannot come into contact with the mace, it's because the Kohanim are the ones who do the Avodah. And if a person is Tomei, he will ruin the Avodah. He will profane the Avodah. And therefore, in the interests of protecting the Avodah of the Mishkan, of the Mikdash, that is why the Torah says to Kohanim, keep away from Tumah, because you are the ones who will be doing the Avodah. Now, if we're looking for a similar prohibition of this type, we will find one. The Torah says, it is also for a Kohen to become inebriated. I mean, that once again brings us back to Nadav and Aviyu. Straight after that, Yayin v'sheicher al teish tata uvanecha, etc. They're not allowed to become intoxicated. Now, the reason why is because of the Avodah. If they become intoxicated and then perform the Avodah, they'll profane the Avodah. And because that is true, it happens to be the halacha that if a Kohen knows for a fact that there is no feasible chance of him being involved in the Avodah in the near future, however long the near future will be, so he's able to become intoxicated to his heart's content, or his wife's discontent. But certainly the halacha has nothing to say about it, because he's not involved in the avodah. If that's the case, then perhaps one may have understood tumas meis in the same way. Namely, it's about protecting the avodah, and if that's the case, then Should you know that someone else is on call, they're on duty, and you're not going to be involved in Avodah, and you have 7 days at your disposal, perhaps it would be mutter, if the Avodah won't be compromised. Says the Rachaim HaKadosh, but of course we know that is not the case. It is an essential prohibition, as we said from the outset. It is not about protecting the Avodah, it's about protecting the sanctity of the Kohen. And therefore it makes no difference if you're going to be involved in the Avodah, if there is no Avodah, practically, for you. It is an essential prohibition for a Kohen. And this is what's communicated by the shift, most fascinatingly, from the plural to the singular. Because the Torah, of course, is addressing all Kohanim, but one may have understood that the problem of Tumas Meis, if all of the Kohanim become Tameis, then there'll be no one left to do the Avodah. To that end, the Torah says no. It shifts to the singular to tell you that even one individual whose tumah will not affect the avoda at all, for each and every Kohen it is a problem. Lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav, it is an essential prohibition because of the kedusha of the Kohen. So these are very major concepts that are coming out from taking a look at how the Pasuk is presenting these things to us, the redundancies, the grammatical shifts from Lashon Rabim to Lashon Yochid. The Meforshim are alert to all of these things. What's most interesting is, having spoken about the essential problem of a Kohen becoming Tamei, so let us ask a question which is Lahalocha velo lemaisa. And that is, we say, or the Torah says, that it's also for a Kohen to become Tommy. And if he's already Tommy, so now what? Can he stay Tommy? He came into contact with a mace. Something happened, a tragedy happened. He was in proximity of a mace and became Tommy the mace. So he's already Tommy. Now what will we say? Is he now still also for him? Does he need to leave the room straight away? Does it make a difference anymore? Now, we should know instantly that according to the majority of Rishonim, and that's the Psak Halacha, is that it remains osur min haTorah for him even to continue to become Tomei, or to become Tomei again, shall we say, even though he's already Tomei. And that's a big chiddush. Because really, what we're saying is that with each period of time, or each additional encounter, something happens that we may not have thought possible, and that is, he becomes more Tommy. In other words, he was Tommy to a certain degree. The longer he stays, the more Tommy he becomes. And therefore, he constantly has the Torah saying, the nefesh lo yitama, you are becoming more and more Tommy. Now, we may not have noticed it, because as Tommy as a person has become, it is the same one procedure that will make him completely Tohar. That may well be true. It doesn't change the fact that pending that time, the clearance of the Paraduma and of the mikveh, etc., the more he comes into contact with the mace, the more Tomei he becomes. That's really what the halacha looks like. We should know, however, there is a minority opinion. It's based on a statement of Rabbi Akiva, and it's the opinion of certain Rishonim, that if a Kohen became Tomei, something happened, and he became Tomei, le mace, there is no chiyuv min haTorah for him to avoid tumah for the rest of that day. Those are the words of Rabbi Akiva. The day that he becomes Tomei, so we would say he's already Tomei. And that is the opinion of the Baal Halachos Gedolos and of Rabbeinu Tam. Now, it's almost an academic question, not only because it's a minority opinion, but because even those who say that there is no chiyuv, it certainly is osur for him to remain in that state or to become Tommy again. Certainly Drabonon, maybe even Min haTorah. But a Chiyuv, there isn't. And presumably the reason why is because he is as Tommy as he can be. And it's already happened. Nothing else is happening. Ein Tuma Achar Tuma. What's interesting though is, even within that opinion, that if he's already Tomei, so there will be no chiyuv for being Tomei again, it was explicitly stated that's only true for that day. But tomorrow, the Chiyuv Min HaTorah comes back, the Issa Min HaTorah comes back. And the question, of course, is, what's the difference between today and tomorrow? He still hasn't gone to a mikveh, he's still Tomei Meis, so why does it change with the day? So the Avnei Nezer, the Sokot Shofar Rebbe, explained that to us, it seems that he is as Tomei tomorrow as he was today when he came into contact with the mace. But it's not true. And how can we see that it's not true? As we know, someone who becomes Tomei mace, in order to achieve a state of Tahara, they need to undergo the process of the Parah Aduma, with the ashes and the water sprinkled on them. When does that happen? It happens at two particular points. 3 days from the Tumah, by Yom HaShlishi, and by Yom HaShvi'i, on day 3 and day 7. It cannot happen before day 3, which is very interesting, because I would think, I'm ready, Paraduma is ready, why wait? But you have to wait. But what happens during those 3 days? It must be that a person is only eligible to make that move towards Tahara when 3 days have elapsed from the time of the original Tumah. If the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma would happen on day 2, it would not have any effect because he is not yet distant enough from the original Tumah in order to be affected by it. He is not yet Tahara friendly, we would say, until day 3, which is very interesting, because what that means is there is a certain clock, even with regards to Tumas Meis. We should not say he's Tomei to the highest degree until he becomes Tohar. It's not true. With the passage of time, he becomes more amenable to Tahara, and that, or in other words, less Tomei. And that starts already tomorrow. And because that's true, because he became just that 1 degree less Tomei from today to tomorrow, if he becomes Tomei Lemeis again tomorrow, that is a full Torah violation.
Did you not say the first day he gets more Tomei, though? Like he starts off at a certain stage, and at the end of the day he's more Tomei. Did you not say
that? No. No, it goes in increments of days.
Downwards.
Yeah. What's interesting is, and this therefore closes our discussion with regards to, of course, it's Nogea, actually, to any Kohen, almost. Any Kohen is presumed to be Tomei Meis, or if he really happens to be Tomei Meis, needs to know that according to the majority of Rishonim, and even the minority, once it's past the first day, all of the severity of Lenefesh, Leitama Ba'amav, applies to even what we would call someone who is already Tomei Meis. But this idea of changing with the days is echoed elsewhere in the writings of the Sokot Shofar Rebbe in his introduction to the Sefer Eglei Tal. Eglei Tal is his treatise of Meleches Shabbos. And in the introduction, he quotes something in the name of his father. And it relates to the very first Mishnah in Shas, the beginning of Maseches Brachos. How does Brachos begin? It begins with the discussion of the evening Kriyat Shema. Me'ei Masai Koren Shema Ba'arvis. What is the earliest time to read Shema at night? Well, we know, of course, the answer is when the stars come out at nightfall, whenever that is. The Mishnah phrases it somewhat differently. Me'ei Masai Koren Shema Ba'arvin. From when do we read Shema? Misho'o Shehakohanim Nichnosim Le'echol B'Trumosa. From the time that a Kohen who was Tomei and was looking to get out of it, so he goes to the mikveh, but of course he has to wait till the end of the day. And then, as the Pasuk actually in Parshas Emor, in this week's Parsha says, Uva Hashemesh V'Taher, when the sun sets, when it's night, then he becomes Tahor, and then he can eat Truma. So a Kohen who became Tomei would go to the mikveh, wait out till the rest of the day, and at nightfall can eat Truma. So which is at the same time as Kriyat Shema. So the Gemara, ever practical, asks the question, why are you taking a roundabout way of telling me that you read Shema at nighttime? Tell me, Tesa Kochavim. Why are you bringing this other halacha? If a Kohen was Tomei, he also waits till Tesa Kochavim. That's very nice. It happens to be true. But we're talking about Kriyat Shema. So say, Tesa Kochavim. Get to the point. The answer of the Gemara is no. On the contrary, It's better not to get to the point. Milsa agav urcha al kamashbanav. On the contrary, for the sake of another two or three words to remind ourselves of another halacha, that's a wonderful way of learning halacha. Instead of saying tesach kochavim in a dry manner, tell me, it's like the kohanim tesach kochavim, and person is constantly reviewing the halachas. That's the answer. Says Avnei Nezer, and my father had a question, because there's many halachas that apply at that time of nightfall of tesach kochavim. So the question will still linger. Of all of the halachas that you could choose to associate with the evening time Shema, why did you choose this specific one of a Kohen who was Tomei and that became Tahor at Seisa Kochavim? It's good shaila. Says the Egle Tal, and my father responded that when we look at the halachas of Tumah, it's very interesting because he became Tomei. So we all know, if a person's Tomei, what does he do? Go to the mikveh and it's finished. But the Torah is telling us it's not finished. It's not finished until the next day. He has not completely excised himself or removed himself from the frame of Tumah that he was in until he enters a new frame of time. Because here the Torah is telling us that each day is an increment of time. It is a field. And it's impacted by what happens in it. And if a person became Tumah on a certain day, so even if he went to the mikveh, but the tumah stays with him on that day. It's a fascinating way of considering our relationship with time. Because as long as he is within that day, he is within a block of time that was impacted by that tumah. And he needs to shed it and move into a new day in order to be completely tahor. And this teaches us a lesson, if we could encapsulate it in one sentence, that what affected you today remains with you, may remain with you till the end of the day, but you'll leave it behind by the time you go tomorrow. Says the Egle Tal, if that's true for the halachas of Tumah, it is equally true, and perhaps even more true, for our spiritual endeavors, because life in this world is not always conducive to spiritual growth. And to that end, we have the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. The mitzvah of Kriyat Shema is reconnecting with our Jewishness, Malchus Shamayim. So what shall we say? A person reads Shema in the evening and in the day, and says the Torah, and again the next evening. What shall we say? I read it this morning. Why won't that see me through? Why do I need to read it again? The answer is the lesson learned from Tumah. As surely as something like Tumah, you were Tommy today. But you left it behind because it's a new day. And every new day does not automatically carry with it everything that was true for yesterday. And therefore the most relevant of the halachas to tell me what reading Shema every day and every night is about is take a lesson from Tumah and see how sometimes things get left behind yesterday. Now it's a new day. You can't take anything for granted. You need to reassemble. And that is exactly why, like the Kohen who leaves his Tumah behind, you need to make sure that you don't leave your Kriyat Shema behind. When he starts his Tumah, you start to say Kriyat Shema. The most wonderful interpretation of the opening of the Gemara Brachos there. Now, as we move to one of the halachas that is to be found in Parshas Emor, and of course it's in Yonah de Yoma, that is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Sfarat HaMachem Mimachras HaShabbos. And there are many aspects of the Sfira to talk about. And I wanted to begin by raising an interesting shaila. It's quite common in many communities, in the Pesach is the spring, which then becomes the summer months, to daven what's called early Shabbos, to bring Shabbos in early. From an hour and a quarter prior to sunset, it's possible already to daven Ma'ariv. The question is, the Kehila is here, and they've daven Ma'ariv, and they're about to leave. Is it possible to count the Omer before they go? Essentially, we brought in Shabbos early. We've already davened tonight's Shmona Esrei. Can we count tonight's night of the Omer? So, for example, this year, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Friday night will be the 18th. I'm 4 days removed. It's safe for me to say that this Friday night will be the 18th, Friday night and Shabbos. So it's early Shabbos. Can we already count the 18th? It's a good sign. The typical announcement is we count the Omer after nightfall. But let us see why that is. So let's start at the beginning. The mitzvah of Tosefa Shabbos, to bring in Shabbos early. So actually, at least a few moments before Shabbos begins and a few moments afterwards is a mitzvah to add on just a few moments. But anything up to an hour and a quarter, that's for each and every person if they decide to do that. But it is possible, and it's possible to daven Shabbos davening, and it's also possible to make kiddush. That the Gemara says in Brachos Daf Kaf Zayin. Mekadesh ala kos. So here you are, it's an hour before Shabbos has come in, and you can make kiddush, mekadesh ha-Shabbos. Shabbos is a Torah mitzvah. Kiddush is a Torah mitzvah on Friday night. And it's possible to be fulfilled. Okay, so far so good. So Shabbos davening, Shabbos kiddush. Now Shabbos kiddush, of course, is followed by Sudas Shabbos. And Sudas Shabbos is a mitzvah. A mitzvah to have three Sudas every Shabbos. Okay, so the person made kiddush an hour before sunset or nightfall and proceeds to have his Suda. Here, there's the most interesting comment of one of the Rishonim, the Sefer Hasidim, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And that is, a person who is having their Shabbos Su'uda, or begins before Shabbos, should see to it that it ends once, at least once Shabbos has come in. In other words, they shouldn't finish it before Shabbos, because then they haven't had any of it on Shabbos. Interesting. And he's not the only one who says that. That's the opinion of the Maharshal as well, Rabbi Shlomo Luria, that a person should not have their entire Shabbos meal before Shabbos came in. Now, this opinion is quoted by the Turei Zav, the Taz, Rabbi David HaLevi. And the Taz says, look at the Sefer Hasidim, he'll tell you just to keep going until Shabbos actually comes in. But these are the words of the Taz. Veli nira. To me, it seems, de tosefes mechol ala kodesh hu de araisa, the possibility of adding on from holy, meaning Shabbos, to chol, to the weekday, it's Torah recognized. Al kein, therefore, yotza shafir, a person has perfectly fulfilled his obligation, the mitzvah of Shabbos, afilu gomar kodem laila, even if he finished the whole thing before night even came in. So, where are we? Well, not surprisingly, a machlokas. But to summarize, the Maharshal says, if you're going to start your Shabbos Suda before Shabbos comes in, make sure to finish it once Shabbos has come in. Says the Turei Zav, no problem. You brought in Shabbos early. Tosefes Shabbos. It's been a Torah. So you fulfilled the mitzvah during that time. How are we to understand what is behind this machlokas? You have to wait, you don't have to wait, you can finish before, you can't finish before. So in order to understand this machlokas, we need to ask the most basic question we can about a concept that we meet the whole time, every week, early Shabbos. What is early Shabbos? We take it for granted, but if we open it up, what happens when a person brings in Shabbos early? And in fact, there are two possibilities. Both of which, by the way, are a chiddush. Because when we stop to think about it, bringing Shabbos in early is a chiddush. So really the question is, what is the chiddush of adding on to Shabbos? It could be one of two things. It could be that Friday will go to the same point in time that every day goes to. It will go until the next day comes in, until sunset or the stars come out. That won't change. Friday will never be any shorter than any other day. Thursday is 24 hours, and so is Friday. So what happens on the final hour of Friday? You're bringing in Shabbos early. Are you ending Friday early? Has Shabbos begun already? Have you started Shabbos early? No. It's still Friday. What you've done is, the chiddush of Tosefes Shabbos is that you have extended the Kedusha of Shabbos into the last hour of Friday. It's possible sometimes for an object to attain the Kedusha of something without becoming it. Let me give an example if that sounds a bit abstract straight away. A korban, what has Kedusha if not a korban? A korban has Kedusha. It's possible for an object that's not a korban to have the Kedusha of a korban. If, for example, you redeemed the value of the korban onto some other object, that object is not going on the Mizbeach. It doesn't become a korban, but it has assumed, right, the Kedusha has been transferred. It's possible for that to happen. So too is the Kedusha of Shavuos, through transactions, etc. And could it be, therefore, that what we call bringing Shabbos early means extending the Kedusha of Shabbos into the last hour of Friday? Is it Shabbos yet? No! It's still Friday. The last hour of Friday has Kedusha Shabbos. And that's why you can daven the Tefillah of Shabbos. And you can even make Kiddush. Because Kiddush is about the sanctity of Shabbos. And this last hour of Friday has the sanctity of Shabbos. But it's still Friday. Or, shall we say, the Kiddush is rather different. Bringing in Shabbos early, as its name suggests, is actually starting Shabbos an hour early. And by starting Shabbos, we mean an ending Friday. That's what the Torah allows you to do. The natural point when one day stops and the other day starts is the end of the day. When it comes to Shabbos, you can bring that point of transfer earlier. An hour earlier, it stops being Friday and already starts being Shabbos. And that's why you daven your Shabbos tefillahs. And that's why you can already make Kiddush, because it's already Shabbos. So to put it into one formula, Tosefes Shabbos is either extension, extending the Kedusha from Shabbos into Friday, or expansion, expanding Shabbos so that actually Friday stops and Shabbos already begins. Well, as we can see, this question is at the heart of the dispute between the Taz and the Marshal. And where does it come out? Your Friday night Shabbos meal. Or should I say your Friday late afternoon Shabbos meal. Can you fulfill a Shabbos mitzvah during that time? Well, the Marshal said, no. But you can start if you want. But you have to sleep something till it's really Shabbos. Because according to the Marshal, Tosefes Shabbos hasn't made it Shabbos yet. It's still Friday. And a mitzvah of Shabbos, like the Suda, will need to wait till it's really Shabbos. Whereas for the Turei Zahav, Gesunte, it's already Shabbos. That's what happens when you brought Shabbos in early. You can start and finish even before nightfall, because Shabbos has already begun. So that very conceptual question is the practical question being disputed by the Taz and the Barshal. And now, let us come to the question of the Omer. The Marshal, Rabbi Shlomo Luria, writes in a tshuva, Siman Yud Gimel, that if a person davens Shabbos early, he has to remember not to count the Omer during that time. Why? Because you count the Omer the next day. It's not the next day. Now, how do we field these words of the Marshal? Of course, we understand them perfectly. It's the Marshal l'shitaso, consistent with his understanding of Tosefes Shabbos. Tosefes Shabbos didn't make it the next day, so you can't count the next day. What about the Taz? As far as the Taz is concerned, it's already Shabbos. It's already, to put in different terms, the 18th day of the Omer. That's begun. It happens to be that the Taz recommends that you wait. But there are others who said that you can count. And they take the extreme position that Shabbos has started. So the 18th day of the Omer started. So count away. It's not night yet, but it's the 18th day. It started an hour before nightfall. What's interesting is, of course, our practice is to follow the Marshal. We don't count till nightfall. But now we know why. Because it's not Shabbos yet. It's still Friday with the Kedusha of Shabbos for this last hour. But what's interesting is, there is a flip side to this question, the other side of the coin. Because as we know, if a person, of course, to count with a bracha, you can only count at night. But if one forgot to count at night, so he still counts during the next day, and he's still in the count with the bracha. That's how it goes. So the question is, what would happen this Thursday night if a person, Thursday night is the 17th of the Omer, a person forgot to count. Okay, and he remembers on Friday, after he's already brought in Shabbos. So he said, Mekadosh HaShabbos, and they said, Vayechulu, and then, oi, I didn't count the Omer, it's the 17th. Can he still count to be in the running for pick up again with the bracha on the 18th? So this is the lenient side of the Marshal. Because the very Marshal who says that Shabbos hasn't come in yet, it's not yet the next day, so you can't count the next day, also says, but you can still count this day. That's your grace period, because it's still Friday. So that's the other side of the equation. So this is the background to this question of counting the Omer before Shabbos is coming. What's interesting is, or rather once you've already brought Shabbos in, what exactly does that mean? What's interesting is, this will impact on another question. There is a very widespread custom with regards to Shavuos night. And that is, Ma'ariv on Shavuos night is delayed until nightfall. Some say Ma'ariv, some say at least Kiddush. But in many communities, they don't daven Ma'ariv until nightfall. Why not? Because the Torah says with regards to the days of the Omer, Sheva Shabbosos Temimos Tiyena. They need to be complete. And therefore, we don't wish to daven Shavuos early, which would impinge on the completeness of the days of the Omer. So therefore, for the sake of Temimos, by the way, this understanding of Temimos is not to be found in the Gemara, but it's accepted by Acharonim, and it's become the custom of the Jewish people. For the sake of Temimos, to keep it perfect, we let the day out, and then we daven Shavuos. It's very interesting to consider who is the source of this custom. It's the Taz. The Taz says, don't daven prior to the time, because otherwise the days won't be Temimos. So what is very interesting about that? It could be that this ruling of the Taz is based on the understanding of the Taz of what it would mean to daven Shavuos early. For the Taz is the one who says that when you bring in Shabbos and or Yom Tov early, it's actually stopped being today, and it's already tomorrow. Therefore, if that's what happens, then you can understand that if you would daven Shavuos an hour early, you've lopped off an hour of Omer days, and they're no longer Temimos. However, according to the Maharshal, whose opinion we follow with regards to counting the Omer, so it's interesting to consider, and this is raised by Rabbi Tzalo Zolti Zatzal, the Mishnas Yaivetz, it could be that according to the Maharshal, it wouldn't be a problem at all to daven Shavuos early. It would not compromise the Temimos aspect of the days of the Omer in any way, because davening Shavuos early hasn't stopped it being the 49th day of the Omer. It will continue to be that day until it runs its natural course. And therefore the Temimos issue, one could say, is only an issue if you say that the day ends when you daven for Shavuos. So that's very interesting, having seen both sides, to consider Minhag Yisrael in that way. And Yom Tov, Shabbos and Yom Tov. It's actually learned from Yom Kippur. From Yom Kippur to Shabbos and all Yom Tovim. Right? Right? You can make Kiddush of Yom Tov also, with the exception of Pesach, of course, because the mitzvahs of Pesach have to be done at night. At night, because of the Korban Pesach. So two matzahs and also the arbokosas, that's why we wait for the Seder. Because as much as some people may say, when you bring in Pesach, Pesach has started, it doesn't mean that it's night already. If it's still an hour left of daylight, bringing Pesach early doesn't make it night. It just means it's already Pesach an hour before night. But if you need the night, for that you have to wait. What's most fascinating, just as a PS, because it's in the Parsha, is that this minhag of waiting on Shavuos for davening, and at least for Kiddush, till Tesa Kochavim, was identified by another of the Mefarshim from the Pasuk itself, where in Perek Kaf Gimel, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. So So the Torah has taken us through Pesach, and then through Sfiras HaOmer, and finally we get to Shavuos. It says, Kaf Aleph Ukrasem, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, Mikra Kodesh Yelachem. Very interesting. That is a rare phrase. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. You don't find it with regards to other Yomim Tovim, with the exception of Yom Kippur, which has its own dynamics. But there's no Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, not with Pesach, and not with Sukkos, and actually not even with Shabbos. But with Shavuos there is. Says the Netziv in the HaMikdavar, this is the Makor from the Torah, that everything that you do that relates to the Kedusha of Shavuos, Mikra Kodesh, has to be done Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, on the day itself, and not during the extended time, much as that's, it's considered the extended time for every other Chag, and in many other respects. But in terms of your Mikra Kodesh, which is your davening, right, Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanim, and your Kiddush, that has to be done Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. So it's most interesting, we began with the abstract discussion of the mechanics of Tosefa Shabbos, but by the time we finished, as far as the Netziv is concerned, it's black on white in the Pasuk. This minag is sourced in the Torah itself, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Now, moving from the halachic question of Sfiras HaOmer to the Sfira itself. Pasuk Tes Vav of Perek Kaf Gimel tells us when the count begins. Usvartem lochem mimocharas ha-shabbos. You count from the day after. I'll just read the word without translating it. From the day after Shabbos, from the day that you bring miyom aviyachem es omer hatnufa sheva shabbosos to mimos tiyeno, 7 complete weeks. Now, as we know, although it was a sorely contested point between the Purushim and the Tzidokim, the Mocharas HaShabbos is none other than, well, the Shabbos in question is Pesach itself, and Mocharas HaShabbos is the second day of Pesach. It makes no difference what day in the week Pesach falls. This year Pesach was Monday night, Tuesday, so Sfiras HaOmer, whereas Mocharas HaShabbos is the next day. Whereas, of course, the Tzidokim, who had no Kabbalah, they understood that Mocharas HaShabbos was Sunday. Now, there are many, many discussions as to how we know that the Shabbos here is referring to the first day of Pesach. And the Gemara talks about it. And then the Gaonim spoke about it because the Tzidokim came back under the name of the Karaim in the time of the Gaonim, and once again in the Rambam as well. So Rav Sadia Gaon speaks about it, and the Rambam spoke about it, and it continues to be discussed until our time. But what's interesting is there are two distinct questions here. They should not be confused one with the other. The first question is, how do we know that when the Torah says Mimachras HaShabbos, it's referring to the second day of Pesach, regardless of what day of the week that is? That's the first question. And the answer will be whatever it is. Consult the Gemara in Maseches Menachos, Daf Samach Dalet and Samach Hei. Okay. But then there's a second question. And the second question is, given that we've established that the word Shabbos is a reference to the first day of Pesach, why does the Torah call the first day of Pesach Shabbos? It's a separate question. The first is an issue of demonstrating that Shabbos refers to Pesach. But then the second question is an explanation as to why the Torah would call the first day of Shabbos Pesach. It's a separate question. And to this question as well, there are many answers, but let us present a most interesting approach, which is to be found in the writings of the Meshech Chochma in his Perush to Parshas Vayeschanan. And there, he speaks about the Shalosh Regalim. It's very interesting because, of course, the Shalosh Regalim, they're a group, they're a set. But as far as the Meshech Chochma is concerned, they are more than a set. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos are more than just three members of a family. But they are actually a progression in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what that means is that we are meant to be representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. We are meant to be doing godly things in this world. When we consider the first of the Chagim, when we consider Pesach, So, as we know, we don't celebrate it and we don't rejoice in it. But the state of the Jewish people by the time we left Mitzrayim was not great. It is referred to by the Torah as goy mikerev goy, which means to all intents and purposes, one nation indistinguishable from another nation. With all of the not changing their clothes and not changing their language and not changing their names, which is holding on to some type of connection until HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. But as the Pasuk says in Yechezkel, we quote it on Seder night, Va'at Eirem Ve'erio, the Jewish people were bereft of mitzvahs. According to some, that is the understanding of the biblical phrase, Yod Chazaka, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out with a strong hand. Well, what does that mean with a strong hand? And it's never really repeated, certainly not often, beyond that point. Hashem does things for us, B'Yod Chazaka. So the Mefarshim explain that the reason why it's called the Yod Chazaka is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, had to do most of the work. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world with a system of cause and effect, of a certain order. And zechus, merit, brings positive interaction. And anti-merit brings negative interaction. And if the Jewish people have no merit, then they aren't doing their part in terms of bringing about or allowing, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to act in the way that he wants. And so, we say that Pesach was performed B'Yod Chazaka, means the Jewish people are not pulling their weight, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes them out anyway. It is entirely passive on the part of the Jewish people. That is exactly what needs to change by the time you receive the Torah. And that is what the 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos are all about. For the Jewish people are now looking to rise to the occasion. They're looking to develop themselves to the extent that they are able to bring something to the equation by the time HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to bring the Torah. And indeed, as the Pasuk describes it, Moshe brought the Jewish people out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came out to meet them. They met each other, so to speak, halfway. The Jewish people had something to show for themselves. These were the 7 weeks of development. That's what Sefiras HaOmer is about. And if one could ever say, of course, within the framework that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set up, that the Jewish people were equal partners, that's what they were striving to become as the recipients during these 7 weeks culminating in Shavuos. What's interesting is, how could we get more than equal? Where can one go from there? Says the Meshech Chochma, let's look at Sukkos. Sukkos is very interesting because, as we know, the Torah has this famous question, what is Sukkos doing at Sukkos time? We began to sit in Sukkos at Pesach. So Sukkos should come straight after Pesach. Most people spend the weeks leading up to Pesach in some form of Sukkah anyway, just because the house, there's no room in the house for them. But the Chag of Sukkos naturally should be after Pesach. And the Torah has his answer. There's a famous answer of the Vilna Gaon in his Pirush to Shir HaShirim, that the reason why Sukkos is where it is in the middle of Tishrei is because Sukkos celebrates the Anani HaKovet. Now the Anani HaKovet left the Jewish people at a certain point when they made the Egel. And they came back when the Jewish people had made amends. And that was the beginning of the project of building the Mishkan, which started after Yom Kippur. That's when they were told about it. And the time that everything was ready to launch becomes, or turns out to be, the time of Sukkos, the 15th of Tishrei, 4 days after Yom Kippur. So we celebrate the Anani HaKovet, not when we first had them, but when we got them back. That's how the Vilna Gaon explains. Which is very interesting, because it turns out that if we would say that Pesach is the Jewish people doing very little for themselves, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu providing all the input for the connection, and then Shavuos is the Jewish people providing an equal measure of input for the relationship, Sukkos is overbalanced because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is disconnected until the Jewish people, so to speak, bring him back through their tshuva over the Chet HaEgel. And that has the Jewish people even in a proactive. So we go from passive to active to proactive. The Sholosh Regolim, which is interesting because the word regal, of course, means foot, movement. they are not just a group of festivals, they actually represent a progression, ultimately. What's interesting is, with this sweeping view of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, we'll understand that Pesach actually, of all of the Yomim Tovim, is actually more like Shabbos in a certain respect than a Yom Tov. Because Shabbos, what distinguishes Shabbos and a Yom Tov? Shabbos is HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it. Mekadosh HaShabbos. He created the world before we came on the scene. The Yomim Tovim are, we are Mekadosh the Yom Tov. Hashem is Mekadosh Yisrael, we're Mekadosh the Zmanim. It ends up being true of Pesach also, but in terms of an essential aspect of Pesach, Pesach also had the Jewish people not really being involved, not really being active, but rather passive. And therefore, Pesach is the most Shabbistic of all of the Yom Tovim, if one could say. And it's most fascinating to point out, my uncle Rav Kuperman has mentioned this a number of times, the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is that one can cook for Ochel Nefesh, for food, on Yom Tov, because the Jewish people are Mekadosh the Yom Tov. Their food needs supersede the Yom Tov. That's how the Mishnah Chochmah explains. Now, how do we know that? So the Ramban says that when the Torah assers Malacha on Shabbos, it says, Lotase, kol Malacha. You can't do Malacha. End. Everything. In this week's parsha, when it talks about the Yomim Tovim, it says, kol meleches avoda lo sasu. It doesn't say don't do malacha. It says don't do meleches avoda. Meleches avoda has the more industrial aspect as opposed to cooking, etc., which the Ramban called meleches hana'a. I think that might depend who you ask. But certainly it's a more domestic and different type of malacha. So the freedom Shabbos, the Torah assers malacha. On Yom Tov, it assers meleches avoda. But if we go back to Parshas Bo, when the Torah spoke about Malacha on Pesach, we'll find not the one and not the other. Actually, both. For the Torah says in Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Kol Malacha Lo Yeyaseh. This is talking about Pesach. Kol Malacha Lo Yeyaseh Lachem. Ach Asher Yochel Lachol Nefesh Hu Levadu Yeyaseh Lachem. You can't do any Malacha except for Ochol Nefesh. Asked Rav Kuperman, it turns out that you plus 2 minus 1 equals 1. So why did the Torah tell me in this roundabout way, don't do any malacha except for Ochel Nefesh? Why not take the direct route of Parshas Emor to tell me from the outset you can't do Meleches Avodo, which and never ban from the outset all malachas and then undo it? The answer is the Torah has referred to Pesach in Shabbistic terms and then took away. Because it's not like the other Yom Tovim. And from a certain point of view, it's like Shabbos. You can't do any malacha like Shabbos. Except, ultimately, it becomes a Yom Tov, and then Ochel Nefesh becomes carved out of the blanket Issa to do malacha. As opposed to the other malachas, where naturally, the way the Torah phrases it, is Komalechas Avod. And that is the reason, says Meshech Chochmah, why the Torah refers to the first day of Pesach as Shabbos. Because within the context of Sfira Saomer, and what is the Sfira about? The Sfira is about counting and developing to moving away from that basic point, that passive point, that Shabbistic point of Pesach, which is a Yom Tov, which should have been a Yom Tov, but was more of a Shabbos, moving on from that to embrace Shavuos, which is entirely a Yom Tov, which is a function of the development of the Sfira Saomer. And therefore, we always talk about it as Mimochras HaShabbos, because it is the Shabbos nature of Pesach that requires the Sefirah. So this, I believe, is food for thought for these days and weeks. Of course, we count. It's not hard to count. It's so easy to count the Omer. That's why we forget, because you just count every day. You're almost bound to forget on this, because it's just counting. But if the Svartam Lechem Yimachros HaShabbos is looking towards some form of development where we don't wish to be purely passive with nothing to say for ourselves, but rather to have something to bring to the table, that's a product of our Avodah, which should continue during these weeks, culminating in Chag HaShavuos. Haba'alein Latova. Leave it over here for this evening.